It's 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Locally grown radio, your home for news, talk, and sports from Rudolph to Nakusa. 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Monica Ricks in New York. About 70,000 burners are still stranded after storms turned the Nevada desert into a muddy mess. Paul Reeder goes to Burning Man every year.
The sense is that people help each other out. People, you know, help each other with housing, with food, with supplies. So I think there's a general sense that, you know, this is going to end very soon.
But CBS's Christian Benavides tells us it may not.
With more rain on the way, there are concerns about a lack of supplies, overflowing porta potties, and roadblocks. The festival turned nightmare could be a long way from being over.
At least one death has been reported there. In the southeast, people are still struggling to recover from Hurricane Idalia.
Hurricane Idalia was the strongest storm to hit that part of northern Florida in more than a century, but Governor Ron DeSantis now says
it's going to end up being, I think, a pretty rapid restoration compared to past storms, which is good because that helps with everything. When you're trying to clean up debris, when you're trying to get all this other stuff in order.
He reports especially good progress in getting power restored. Tom Foti, CBS News.
But there is concern now that federal aid for these disasters may run out. Here's CBS's Skylar Henry.
The fight over spending will continue as Congress returns to Capitol Hill, looking to avoid what could be a partial government shutdown when the current fiscal year wraps up at the end of September. The White House wants a stopgap funding bill passed to temporarily keep the lights on at federal agencies.
What we do know is a government shutdown is not good for anybody.
That's Republican Senator Mike Rounds on CNN.
Alexei Reznikov prashov.
Ukraine's president plans to ask Parliament to replace its defense minister this week amid allegations of corruption. Oleksiy Reznikov got the job back in 2021, just 3 months before Russia's invasion. Crisis averted today in Minnesota, where about 100 inmates took over a prison. WCCO TV reporter Barrett Leone.
About 100 inmates, dozens of inmates, refused to return to their cells. According to the DOC, some inmates were unhappy with the modified cell release schedule this weekend, meaning inmates had limited access to showers, phone use, and recreation, and refused to return to their cells because of this. The DOC says this happened because they're about 50 officers short and that things remained peaceful, calm, and stable until prisoners returned to their cells.
Key West honored Jimmy Buffett today with a huge procession of parrot heads down Duval Street.
We're just so grateful for everything that he's been to everybody, especially us Floridians.
Buffett was 76. This is CBS News.
You need to hire fast and hire right? You need Indeed. Their all-in-one hiring platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates efficiently. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Nachos! Yeah, you nachos!
Hey, I'll take some.
Great. And some Frank's Red Hot.
Oh, nah, I'm good.
Oh, you're just gonna eat these dry, plain, boring nachos with no Frank's? Seriously? Frank it up. Frank it up. Come on, lady. Frank it up. Frank it up. Frank it up. Yeah! Yeah, this guy finally gets it. Hey, look, we're on the Jumbotron.
It's the perfect blend of flavor and heat. Frank's Red Hot. I put that on everything.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your engine against sludge and wear with a synthetic oil change. O'Reilly Auto Parts has 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil for $35.95. Plus, get a $5 O reward to use on a future purchase. Our professional parts people can also recommend all the supplies you need for your next oil change. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts or visit O'ReillyAuto.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Saddle up, buckaroos. It's time to start the cattle drive with Trail Tunes, the new cowboy, western, and south of the border show on Wiscountry 105.5 WIRI. Every Thursday from 7 to 8 p.m., join me, Gene, Roy, Tex, and Rex with songs of lonesome cowboys, wicked rustlers, and sighing senoritas. From the sons of the pioneers to riders in the sky, Trail Tunes will have you wishing for those wide open spaces. Every Thursday from 7 to 8, only on Wiscountry 105.5.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Lows dip down to about 67 tonight under partly cloudy skies, southwesterly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. High of 97. Tomorrow, lots of sunshine. Lows dip down to about 73 tomorrow night. Mid-90s Tuesday, turning much cooler Wednesday, with highs in the mid-70s and storms. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 92.
Hello, world. Welcome to WFHR's Director's Cut for this September 3rd, session 35.
We actually counted this time, so now we know. We know for sure.
We know that there are 35. Thank you very much for looking that up, brother. Appreciate it. 35 of these.
I know. It just boggles my mind.
I genuinely, Seth just told me that 2 seconds ago, and I still have wrapped my brain around it. In all seriousness, I mean,
yeah.
We really thank so much our guests that have joined us for this show. All of you listeners out there have spread the word about this show.
Yeah.
And certainly Civic Media for allowing us and giving us the opportunity to do this kind of thing.
Absolutely.
A big thank you to everybody in the above. And personally, I want to thank you, Seth. This was something that I brought to you. It was a project that I've wanted to work on for decades, and you brought it to life. You are the reason why I can come up with ideas, and I can do a bunch of different crazy stuff on the side and, you know, be that that guy who is playing the instrument, all the instruments.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the cymbals between his knees, and he's got the
one-man
organ.
Band.
Yes,
yeah.
I can do that. I can't do it alone. Not a show like this. Mm. There's no way this show would be nearly as successful or good or made it to 35 without you, man. So I really appreciate you too, as well as this whole thing, being my partner in all this.
Yeah, right. Well, and I agree. It does. I think this one does take two people to get this job done. But don't sell yourself short. Of course, I don't know if people know this. James is the one that books most of the acts here that we talk to. He's the one that comes up with the ideas of what we're going to talk about and everything. And I do the production side. So it's actually a really good team effort.
We're an awesome team. That being said, Seth booked our biggest agent, our biggest guest so far.
still, it was relatively easy. I just wrote an email. That's all I did. So
another person that has been an integral part of the show is Connie Tomsky-Fayville.
Yes.
Connie, especially when we were first starting this out, helped us out so much in booking and connecting us with other bands and other acts. And of course, Seth and I have both emceed Friends of Rapids Music before and the great festival that they have coming on. So we thought with our 35th episode, why not kick things off local and talking a little FRM?
Let's do it.
Their great concert is coming up Saturday, September 9th from 1 to 9 at beautiful Robinson Park.
Mm-hmm.
The acts that they have are so great. I got to talk to Connie on Friday as part of Midday Magazine, and we were talking about the acts and all the inner workings that go on with this.
Mm-hmm.
For those that didn't get to hear that interview, one of the cool things to come out of that, I thought, was Connie's the scout. She's the one that hunts all these bands down. And certainly some people reach out to her, but it's a lot of her looking into musical acts where her kids are in Minnesota and out in New York and that kind of thing, along with bringing in, obviously, local acts.
Right.
So one of the other things that was interesting, and I've noticed this for years, they're going into their seventh, and I've been a part of four of these, I believe.
Okay.
And the opening act is always such a good act to kind of get you going, wake you up a little bit,
right,
but not like screaming waking you up. Like an ease into the music, into the day. That second act is usually a duo and a very similar vibe, but a little more energy. And the third act around 3 o'clock is usually a threesome. And it's a band where it's really like, okay, here's the energy. We're going to get you down to the stage. Mm-hmm. We're going to keep that energy going. That 3 o'clock feeling doesn't happen during FRM Fest.
Right.
So and hearing her talk about this, like that's all what I was just saying right there is all Connie breaking it down. And
how
integral she thinks that every act is important at that particular time and fitting them in the right spot. They wrap up with a big band, as you think, you know.
Mm-hmm.
As a musician, I think she's a real player's coach.
Yes.
She understands what it's like to be in a duo and follow a big five-piece band or something like that. It's not really fair. It doesn't flow right.
Right.
So that part of this, I just took a step back and like, man, that's just really cool to me, I thought. And keep that in mind as we're talking about this and telling you the bands.
Well, and this is 8 straight hours of music. I mean, this takes a bit of planning to make sure this all comes off without a hitch. And boy, does Connie do a great job with that.
The first
question.
The first band is the Charlie and Howard duo. It's an acoustic acoustic variety act. Mm-hmm. These guys have been playing together for so long and are such a good band. They're so good together, the chemistry. Mm-hmm. The thing that really stands out about them, too, is their chemistry with the audience. They love interacting with the audience.
Again, wonderful.
Great first act.
Great way to start it off, yeah.
Again, that'll be at 1 o'clock. And at 2 o'clock, Heartstrings.
Oh, we know a little bit about Heartstrings, don't we?
Love our friends at Heartstrings. Katie and Ben are amazing. Connie actually counted this out. Ben is in 14 bands.
How can he do that?
I tease him all the time about him being in like 100 bands. When I hear the actual number, somehow it's more out there than me saying 100.
Mind-boggling.
It's just crazy.
Absolutely.
To Ben's credit, he's not a part of those bands out of charity. He is doing that because he is that good and that good of a teammate. Mm-hmm. People love playing with him along with his talent. They just love having him a part of things too. Right. And him and Katie, if it hasn't been mentioned already, they're a couple. And they're one of your favorite couples. If you don't know them, they will be one of your favorite couples after you're done with their show.
And somehow, we've had Ben on the show. We haven't had Heartstrings on the show.
We're going to make that happen. We're going to make that happen.
Every time we mention someone we need on the show, we need like ring a bell or something just to remind us. We got to put those on.
You at home, have a drink of water and take a shot of water every time we do this. I don't know what time you're listening to us, so we're going to play it safe and just say water.
Just say water. Yeah.
Ben, you've heard Ben. And if you throw a rock, you've run into somebody who heard Ben before. Mm-hmm. Some of the smartest fingers you'll ever hear on the guitar.
Yep.
Great songwriter, great vocalist.
Oh.
Katie is a theatrical voice. Mm-hmm. And you put this combination together and it sounds so good together. Whether they're doing jazz or pop or whatever kind of style of music they're doing or an original cover or an original song.
Yep.
It's a different sound. I don't even know how necessarily to describe it. I'm not saying that you've never heard anything like it, but I don't think you've heard much like it.
Well, and their voices blend together so well.
Yeah, the great chemistry.
And their harmonies are tight and wonderful. Yeah, yeah. Do not miss Heartstrings. If you have not had the chance yet, check them out.
I can't believe I get to say this for another time, and I cannot wait to announce this to the crowd when it happens. The Goobers! The Goobers are at 3. It's a great band
name.
That's
a great band. Lots of great band names this year. Yes. I got to say that. Yes. Yeah.
These guys are going to be a little bit more of the Dick Dale, kind of the surfer sound.
Nice.
Connie was telling me that they have a great version of 96 Tears. And I have to stick around for that alone. Like, I got to hear that.
Oh, I love surf guitar, man. I am so into that.
I thought this would be right up your wheelhouse.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm ready.
There's a now you know more about that genre than I do, but not just any musicians can play that.
Oh no, not at all. And you know, it was kind of for a while. You know, the especially the instrumental version back in the early '60s was pretty big. You had the Ventures. Dick Dale, of course, was one of the progenitors of the sound. But I love the landlocked bands. I mean, the great Midwest story of that was the Trashmen from Minneapolis, who played a just insane version of Papa Umau Mau and the Birds the Word combo song, which was a big hit. But it's like punk rock from 1962, if you've ever listened to that. But man, there's nothing like that sound, that twangy sound. Dwayne Eddy is another one, too. I don't want to forget him. That instrumental guitar sound that you just don't hear anymore.
I didn't know those guys were from Minnesota.
Yes.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And I'm glad it was you that told me that. That's perfect. That's really perfect. They're going to be a lot of fun.
Yes.
That's going to be. They do a little bit of instrumentals, but they've also got some singing sound, in some of theirs. And
love it.
Just that sound. Yeah. And hearing that sound live. I mentioned this about jazz all the time. Jazz is like hockey. Like, you got to see it in person. You know, you can experience it, you can love it, but until you see a game in person, it's just not,
it's not the same.
Yeah, there's something about it.
Yeah.
At 4 o'clock, the Alternators with Horns.
I love the With Horns.
Such a good band
That's
name.
Great.
That's good. Now, the Alternators were around for a while, and then they added a horn section, so thus the name, but also great play on words.
Yeah,
great play on words. They do blues right. They do blues, baby, and they do it right. But at the same time, fun blues. I would say the kind of getting you moving, enjoying the music kind of blues. I think you're going to have a good time with these guys.
That's the hallmark of a good blues band, not just the slow blues, but it's just doing some of the more of the upbeat stuff, which sounds, you know, kind of like a contradiction in terms.
Sort of.
But when you hear it, you'll know. Yeah.
You get it. Yeah. You know, you watch any like Bo Diddley or BB King live, you don't see them up there crying. No. They're up there, they're having a good time. They're enjoying themselves. That's a lot of what the blues is.
Absolutely.
Especially if you haven't given a shot before, you're going to enjoy this. Yes. And this band in particular. At 5 o'clock, the Funkyard Dealers.
That's, oh man,
that's a the name.
Fabulous
that's
name.
The name.
Oh man,
it's in the name. They do funk, baby. They, yep. I mean, they bring the funk. They get the funk out now. One of the things that we enjoy about a band like this is bringing a sound to this area that we don't always get.
We don't get that a lot. No.
Yeah, yeah. And Connie and I were getting into this because I found out, I didn't realize Connie was such a huge Parliament fan.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
It was great. We were talking about it. But one of the things I think that, especially if you know funk, or say you watch George Clinton or Parliament Funkadelic or something, a lot of pomp and circumstance, a lot of going on stage, a lot of colors, a lot of excitement and all that. But the thing that gets lost in the shuffle is no musician, whether we're talking about this band, the Funkyard Dealers, or we're talking about Parliament or James Brown's band, all of these bands, some of the tightest musicians you'll ever hear.
It's the good stuff.
It's integral to funk. You couldn't just be an average musician. You had to be great because you have to be so tight on this music.
Mm-hmm. Funk is one of the harder popular musics to play, which is why when you get a good funk band, there's something special. And that's what we're looking forward to on next Saturday.
Yeah, the Funkyard Dealer is going to be great. And a perfect band to go right into the main band, the headliners, the Positions. This is high energy funk. This is high energy funk.
I'm fascinated with the idea of, because I already consider funk to be kind of a high energy music, but if they're specifically say, wow, yeah. I'm curious. I'm very curious.
It's a tight band with a great horn section, some great vocalists, and they play the hits. They got some good stuff of their own. It's such a great band to wrap up the night with. You're going to have fun and you're going to leave Robinson Park smiling and in good spirits and probably full too, because they're going to have food down there. They're going to have a dance contest, dance contest for kids, dance music, just for the kids.
Yep.
Bounce house down there that Connie will have to talk me into not going into.
Oh man.
Arts and crafts are going to be down there as well. Lots of yard games. In fact, Connie was saying that they got even more games than usual down there.
Oh,
this
good
year.
That's good to hear. You know, it was kind of a disappointment last year, not because of the bands or anything. They were great, but the weather just did not cooperate last year. It was kind of a downer because of how it was cold and rainy, and because of that, a lot of people weren't, you know, didn't come out till the very end when it actually started to lighten up a little bit. But I'm hoping this year, please, you know, to get that weather, even if it's, you know, hot, I don't care, just as long as it's not raining, you know.
I'm glad you brought that up. Connie and I touched on this too. Last year's was a bit of a rain out and didn't have the turnout that we normally do, which is why FRM wasn't able to do some of the things this year to build up to this show that, you know, normally they
would have.
It's also integral to mention that this is this is one of their few, if not their only, chance to raise funds for FRM. And for those that don't know, Friends of Rapids Music puts into the Boys and Girls Club, does work with other nonprofits in this community. They do free music lessons for kids. They help out some of our citizens in this town that are musicians that when they need help.
Right.
It's so vital to have an organization like this in our community and for us to support them. I mentioned this on Midday Magazine, and I stand on this. I think there are certain things Central Wisconsin does better than most anybody else in this state, maybe even in the union. And buying local, supporting local, that's not just a phrase to us. We back that. We truly do. We proved it. We coming out of the pandemic, we proved it.
Yep.
And we continue to prove it every day in this area. This event is one of those signature buy local, support local events.
Yep.
When you show up at this event, you are not just taking in some great music and at one of the more beautiful parks in our area. You are supporting all of this stuff that FRM supports.
Yep.
You're putting back, it's an investment, not just of your time and your energy, but of all those other things. And if you can't make it to the fest, we understand. Please spread the word about this.
Yeah.
Let people know about this amazing free concert happening at Robinson Park on September 9th from 1 to 9. It's going to be a great show. And, you know, everybody can do that. Everybody can spread the word about this.
It's really easy. And like you said, we're looking for something bigger this year. And even and despite whatever the weather is, let's just say that.
Yeah.
Well, let's get the word out. Let's get people, as many people there as we possibly can. And we'll be people there to keep you company. I believe James Maloff will be doing some MC work again, so you can go and make fun of him. I don't know. Just do something.
Please, please do. Yeah, I'll be up there like Fozzie Bear. You can throw tomatoes and stuff.
Waka, waka.
I'm very humbled to be a part of this. And I'll be there for the first half of FRM, and I'm just thankful to Connie for inviting me again and
that's
being a part of things.
Yeah.
We'll meet you down there. Visit Robinson Park in Wisconsin Rapids for the 7th annual Friends of Rapids Festival. Full day of great music, including funk, blues, jazz, acoustic, rock. You like it, it'll be there.
Yes.
A bunch of stuff for the kids and for you as well. Meet us there at Robinson Park Saturday, September 9th for FRM Fest 7.
That's going to be great.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
See you there, everyone.
Yeah. You can find out more by going to frmgroup.org. That's frmgroup.org. And again, a big shout out to our friend Connie Tomsky-Fayville for all the great info and all this good stuff that she does for our community.
Well, we're going to take a break. Our first one here. We're going to come back here in just a minute with more Director's Cut and... who knows? Who knows what we'll be talking about today?
It's a mystery.
Anything can happen with James
and
me.
What's in the mystery box?
We'll be right back.
Do you catch yourself quoting TV shows like that? It could win you a free meal and make you our next star of the day with Culver's. Join the morning show on WFHR every Friday.
What you talking about, Willis?
My name's James, and I'm telling people every Friday we'll play a theme song or a quote from a movie.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give it.
You call 424-2600, give the correct answer, and you'll win a family pack from our Wisconsin Rapids Culver's.
To the Batmobile.
Join the morning show every Friday for Culver's Star of the Day.
I love it when a plan comes together.
Skilled trade workers are the backbone of every community and also the Army National Guard. Soldiers trained to keep the power flowing, engines running, and in every other trade needed to accomplish the mission. These soldiers are on the fast track to learning skills that can set them up for success at home with companies looking to hire the best. Their resumes are being built through their paid training and part-time service. Find out how you too can learn a trade profession by visiting NationalGuard.com. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Welcome back to Director's Cut, everyone. Hope you're having a great, great night, day, whenever you're listening to us out there.
We're podcasted.
Seth and James with you. I wanted to bring attention to a subject, Seth, that is not getting a whole lot of news attention. Iranian director Saeed Rojasi jailed for unauthorized Cannes film screening. A court in Iran has sentenced prominent film director Saeed to 6 months prison for the screening of his film Layla's Brothers at the Cannes Film Festival of 2022. This is something that happens a lot in Iran, in particular in the Middle East, with creatives being jailed. We've seen many stories over the years of journalists being jailed.
Right.
And I think those get quite a bit of attention, but I don't think that the creative world does. And certainly directors like this don't. They are saying that it was a propaganda of the opposition against the Islamic system.
Okay.
I've seen this movie, and it ain't that at all. It is a day in the life. It is kind of one of those stories, telling the story of these brothers. It's a complex tale, family struggling with economic hardship and just day-to-day life that I think even Americans or Europeans or Asians can relate to. It's a good film. It actually was the runner-up for the Palme d'Or, which is the Super Bowl at Cannes.
Right, right. It's that's the top award, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was the runner-up to it and
wow,
everything.
Wow, that's something.
But that attention is what made this happen.
Right.
And in part of the sentencing, they were sentenced 6 months in prison for the screening of the movie. They were found guilty of contributing to propaganda, broke the rules, of all these different things. One of the things that is coming up of this, the 6 months in prison may not seem like that heavy to the people. It's not just the 6 months in prison. They are going to be under probation for years. And during that time, they are not allowed to make more films.
Right.
So it was all built up like the government there made this so that, OK, we're going to make sure we're going to kill these filmmakers' careers, basically.
Right. Yeah.
We're going to destroy their careers. We're going to make it so they can't make more films. So they're not just punishing them with jail time for making a movie.
Right.
But stopping the creative world that they have.
Right.
And not only making future films that could inform and educate and help the rest of the world when it comes to this subject, which I would think the Islamic people would want. I come from this part of the world in many ways. My people do. Not just the Jews, but I have Muslim in me as well. Mm-hmm. And I've got friends. I have many people that I've known that are Pakistani over my lifetime. Mm-hmm. And such a big part of that is we just want the world to understand that we're no different than you. We just want the world to understand that, yes, we have maybe some different laws that we abide by and everything, but we're trying to bring Islam into the 21st century. We're trying to advance and change some of these rules and laws and everything, much like Judaism did and was able to do.
Mm-hmm.
But they can't do that if you keep silencing these filmmakers. You keep silencing these journalists that are trying to do this work that you're holding them back from.
Right. I think it has less to do, and I'm just speculating here, so don't take it for what it's worth. It had more to do with, I think, that the whole day-to-day life thing did not reflect well on the powers that be in Iran right now. And I think it had less to do with quote-unquote Islam than it had to do with something like that.
Yes.
That it kind of shined a light that they didn't want, you know, necessarily people to see. Now, I'm not going to get into, you know, all the reasons why life is like that in Iran. There's a lot of different reasons.
Yeah.
Geopolitics has a lot to do with it and all that kind of thing. The thing I kind of want to stress here is that Iran is has a very rich history of cinema.
Yeah.
I mean, they've had so many creators, directors that have created wonderful films out of Iran, you know, back before the people who are in charge now. But even after that, people have shown, you know, international festivals and all these kinds of things. So I don't want people to think this is, oh, why should I care? Just some, you know, this country over there. And then Iran has this wonderful culture of film over there. And that's what makes this, to me, troubling more, because they've had film screened in competition in international for many, many years. And, you know, we start seeing this and it's like, ah, you know, in the end, I don't think it's going to help them out.
No,
it's only going to give them bad press. I mean, you know, maybe not a lot. We're talking about it here. But I mean, just saying, you know, finding out about this stuff, people are like, what's going on? You know, what's going on with this sort of thing? So
we know this as kids and we learn it as parents or as adults.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot hide things from the world. You cannot hide things from people. You can put all the, you know, you want to clean your room and throw everything under the bed. That's going to be okay for a little while, but eventually mom or dad is going to look under the bed.
Right.
That's no different with this subject, with the world in general.
Yeah.
You're so much better just being in front of things or owning things.
Right.
Hiding nothing has never solved anything.
Yeah.
Period. Nothing in life has ever been solved by hiding it.
And by doing this, you're just drawing more attention to it, which is defeating the whole purpose of you doing that.
Yeah, it's just not very smart.
Which just goes to show that there's other things going on here.
Absolutely.
It has everything to do with politics. It has nothing to do with the film per se on its artistic merits. It's all about that.
Asghar Farhadi and Darshu Majhari, two great Iranian directors. You mentioned great Iranian directors. I just want to get those names out
there. Yeah, let's put them out there, yeah.
And I'll be honest, I don't know that many, so I wanted to get the ones I knew out there. But the great directors, if you're curious about this subject, encourage you to throw it into your search engine, learn more about it, and certainly, you know, look into Iranian films.
Like,
there's some really cool
films.
Look
at the history of
films
in there. It's really interesting, very cool.
No segue. Just want to go right into this. And I admit to a shoehorning it in, but I just think it's very unique and cool. And I happen to know that a lot of our listeners are big fans of the show Firefly.
Yeah, that's true.
Seth and I, early on in this show, were talking about recommendations and different things like that we wanted to talk about, we wanted from you out there.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead and give us stuff that you want us to review or talk about. And I got bombarded with a bunch on Firefly and a couple of other things.
Very nice.
That they wanted us to discuss and everything. Mm-hmm. Especially if we ever get into a show of like shows that should have been given a more of a run, you know, that shouldn't have been cut short or you know, were canceled way ahead of its time and stuff, or ahead of its time, which Firefly is considered to be.
Exactly.
Seth and I have seen a handful of episodes. We're not the most diehard Firefly fans, maybe. Not to speak for you.
Yeah. No.
But but we both of us even know that Nathan Fillion and the great Alan Turek both got their start, kind of their breaks on that show.
That was their big break, yes.
Well, while a reboot isn't guaranteed, Disney Plus has obtained the rights to Firefly when they acquired 20th Century Fox back in 2019 as part of a multi-billion dollar merger.
Hmm.
Since early 2021, initial reports of Disney Plus doing a Firefly revival were surfacing.
Wow.
Fans and enthusiasts were quite excited, in part because both Nathan and Alan are very good friends.
Mm-hmm.
And they're on social media. And when this deal first went down, they both sent each other like messages with a little like, huh?
The thinky face. Yeah, yeah, right.
What we are learning now is that going back to way back then, part of what Disney, I wouldn't say they fought for this, but in the negotiating thing, debate or, you know, that they were going through.
The negotiations, right.
They wanted this. And in part, wow, because they knew that Nathan and Alan wanted this and mm-hmm. they wanted to do a revision. So while it is not set in stone, and certainly there are writers and actor strikes going on as we speak during the recording of this podcast, so everything is up in the air right mm-hmm. now, it looks like this is going to happen. And for one, I think it's really cool that mm-hmm. for the fan base, but I also think it shows the importance of fan bases speaking up.
Yes. Yeah, we've seen that, you know, recently. It's fascinating to me for this one in particular because it had such the number of people that have grappled, you know, hooked onto the show from the amount of actual content that's out there is it's amazing.
Yeah.
Because there was only, you know, so many episodes. They did the movie because fans really wanted to see it. But that's been it.
Yeah.
That's really all that they've done. But man, this has got one of loyal and very vociferous, very they will let you know when they want something done. So I'm not surprised.
I got my dad into Arrested Development a while back.
Mm-hmm.
And like a month or two later or whatever, he comes up to me. He's like, hey, why don't you tell me there's only 3 seasons? I was like, oh, whoa, wait. fans of shows, like they want more content. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't matter almost if it's if there's only so many, it seems like it's even more.
It does seem that way.
I know plenty of people that wanted another season of The Sopranos or things like that.
Right.
But it's shows like this where mm-hmm. it really stands out, where they really like, oh, we got to have this. And it's almost like an insane kind of like fan outpour that happens with it. I remember being a kid and this happening with Picket Fences.
Oh, yes.
And it's the first memory I have of this, of fans like making something happen. I could be wrong about this, but I believe that the fans spoke up and they got an extra season of Picket Fences, I think, because of it.
I think it was one more. I think you're right.
It wasn't much, but I think they got at least another season or like a made-for-TV movie or something like that. But it was the first example in my brain of this actually like turning into something.
The example I have is, of course, connected to one of the last shows that we had, of course, Mystery Science Theater 3000. Go to civicmedia.us/shows. Go Director's Cut and listen to our interview with Mary Jo Peele. Mm-hmm.
Do it now.
We do it right now. Well, no, not right
Interrupt
now.
This episode and go listen to that one and then come back to this one.
And then listen to it again. on that show, that's a great example. When it looked like for sure that Comedy Central was going to cancel the show after season 7, it looked like it was basically a done deal. They literally messed up Comedy Central's fax machine.
Yep.
Because they bombed, they sent so many faxes, the fans did. They couldn't do business.
It's crazy.
Because the fans were like, no, you are going to do this. And that was a little bit earlier, but they did keep the show on for another season or whatever. And then when they finally did cancel it, then the fans turned around and said, went to another network and said, hey, you need this show.
Yep.
And they went to Sci-Fi at the time. That's what it was called. And they crammed their business, did the same thing.
Yeah.
And they're like, and basically they got 3 more seasons out of it because of the amazing fans, which is really, really remarkable.
And maybe just as remarkable as all this that we're talking about is that this doesn't, like, why would you not be doing this? Why would you be these producers and these people that run things that think that they know everything or that they live in these bubbles and I know what the American people want to see. And even though they're telling me that we shouldn't have canceled this show, I know better. And I don't understand that thought process either.
Well, and then, of course, they'll be the first ones to say when it fails. That's what people wanted. You know, yeah, and then they turn all the blame back on the crowd because it's easier to do that. And then, what? It wasn't me. It wasn't my fault.
We have one of the greatest examples of this ever that is in the RR echelon now. And we can thank Morbius for that. Because Morbius was so bad. It was doing so bad in the box office. It was so horrible that, of course, the meme culture got a hold of it. And it blows up. And if you looked at Twitter, and yes, I know it's called X now, I'm not calling it that. If you went to Twitter and you saw trending, you would see Morbius trending all the time, way at the top. So these people that live in bubbles see this and like, oh, people love Morbius. We should re-release it in theaters. It's not bad enough that we lost over $100 million already. Let's roll the dice again with this puppy. And they lose 80 more million. It was a bomb. It was horrible. People were making fun of it, but because they were living these bubbles, they did not realize.
They just don't
that,
get it. No.
And a lot of jobs were lost over that one. A lot of jobs.
If we could only do that with Jared Leto's career. Yes. If only we could do that with his career,
I'd
man.
I'd be pretty okay with that. Yeah. I'd be all right with that. We will take our second break here. Okay. Think? All right. Let's take that, and we'll come back with some more fun conversation on Director's Cut.
Locally grown 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you. Wisconsin Decides 2024. The road to the White House begins here. And Civic Media delivered with all-day coverage of the first Republican presidential primary debate.
The only network with every show live from Milwaukee.
I could see a scenario where Trump squeaks by again. Will people on the left be willing to accept that?
Conversation you won't find anywhere else.
On your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Lows dip down to about 67 tonight under partly cloudy skies, southwesterly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. High of 97 tomorrow, lots of sunshine. Lows dip down to about 73 tomorrow night. Mid-90s Tuesday, turning much cooler Wednesday with highs in the mid-70s and storms. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 92.
Welcome back to Director's Cut here at WFHR, locally grown radio. Seth and James here with you. And we thought a fun way to kind of wrap up the show would be talking about this great article I found at screenrant.com. Do some nice reporting over there.
They do.
They're good people over there.
Get around the ads, you're fine, yeah.
Yes, yeah, exactly. You're so right about that. A big thank you to them for putting this one out there, because movies can easily become overrated when they don't quite live up to the hype. It's one of the things that I've learned the most as a moviegoer going forward. Mm-hmm. I purposely will not let things build up for me. I've been let down a number of times and by good movies that it was not the movie's fault. The movie was perfectly fine. I wouldn't change anything about it almost, but because I hyped it up so much in my head that it can't live up to these certain things. Mm-hmm. And you know, with nowadays in marketing and everything, you're going to see some of that. We've gone through a summer of it. Where nobody had Barbie or Oppenheimer being the biggest movies this summer.
No.
Doing well, but not that well.
Exploding, yeah, right.
However, everybody
dude, I didn't.
Actually, that was good. We're leaving that in. That was good. I'll back you on that one. That was pretty funny. When it comes to going into this year, though, anybody would have told you, well, if you're going to invest in money, you're going to invest your money in something that you think is going to do well in the box office, Mission Impossible, Teflon,
Indiana Jones,
Teflon, these will do great. Nope. They are, as we are speaking, already streaming. At least I know Indiana Jones is going to be in stuff.
I saw it too,
So it tells you how bad that they had this rate, how bad they are at this.
Yeah.
When it comes to overhyping these movies and that, and again, it's no fault to the movies or the filmmakers.
No.
It's more about the studios that I have an issue with when it comes to this subject. I think that you had a summer that told you all you need to know if you are in these positions. Let the people tell you what they're going to want to watch.
Right.
Let the people tell you what they're going to hype up.
Yeah. Even though they'll take the wrong conclusions.
But they always do that. But anyway. They always do, yes. So Screen Rant put together a list of 12 of the most overrated movies people pretend to love.
Okay.
And we're gonna tear this apart. We're going to have some fun with it. We'll also find some we'll agree with, maybe.
Okay.
But honorable mentions, Grease and Pretty Women. Or Pretty Woman.
Oh, okay.
Pretty Honorable. Women, the sequel that did horrible. It was a combination of Little Women and Pretty Woman.
Oh, wow.
It was bad. Bad movie.
Wow, you just blew my mind there, man. I can't. Whoa. What is going on with those women, man?
I don't know what that was. I apologize.
That was good, though. I like that. They should have made that one.
Grease. I think Grease is low-hanging fruit, but it's a great place to start.
It is low-hanging fruit, and I can't stand that movie. I hate it. I know. Hate
I
that
thought
movie.
It was a good one to bring
oh,
up.
Oh, my God. But Pretty Woman, I saw it like many, many years ago, and it was fine. I'm not like a Pretty Woman super fan.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure that I think my wife likes that movie a lot, though.
You know what? Yes, she does. I remember Beth and I talking about this. Yeah. So Pretty Woman, I may have seen it, but I don't remember.
Okay.
I'm going to be honest. I don't remember. So I'm going to focus on Grease, which my cousin and my sister watched that movie, like that and Dirty Dancing back to back, like crazy during the summer.
Ouch.
I am so burnt out of those movies. But I will say that Grease, I don't think is a bad movie.
Mm-hmm.
For me, even as a kid, what I couldn't wrap my mind around is these people are not high schoolers. Like they you had a guy
bald,
who was, you had a guy who was balding. You had a guy who was bald in there. I'm pretty sure one of the guys was 45. I am pretty certain.
I think
of
you
that.
May be right.
That I could never wrap my mind around that. And I think that we've seen in recent years that musicals can be successful.
Oh yeah.
You've got to cast them right.
Oh.
You really do. That's important. I don't know if Spider-Man is as successful if they didn't get the Tom Holland thing right. If they didn't go askew a little younger.
Yeah.
I think that's
point.
An integral part of one of the most integral parts of movies is the casting. And that seems very basic.
Yep.
But I think it's a lot more than you realize.
Yeah. I think it's an art form, you know, and the good casting agents are the ones that you can see them because they work a lot.
So at number 12 on the list is Fight Club from 1999.
Okay. I have never seen Fight Club. So I can't really comment on it. I do know that it seems a bit overblown.
Yeah.
What's happened since then, people have been talking, you know, the faux, you know, like tough guy, you know, Fight Club.
Yeah, the wannabe
like,
alpha.
Yeah,
male.
It's like, come on, really? This is what you think this is a cool thing to do? So that's not on the film, but it's on the people who took these weird, you know, takeaways from the movie. It's like, wait, this is something you think is good? Ooh, I don't know.
I will first of all say that one of my favorite directors of all time is David Fincher.
Mm-hmm.
Big fan of his. I've loved every movie he's made. I haven't thought every movie he's made has been great, but I've been very thankful I've seen every movie he's made. I really liked Fight Club because I got it. I understood what he was trying to do with it. The movie is not about guys getting together and fighting and getting and having the secret club and all that. It's about the materialism of our society and how caught up we are in it, and how, like George Carlin said many years ago, all these things, you can't take them with you, man. Why are you putting so much of your time and effort into
stuff
them?
Stuff for my things.
And Fight Club was a lot about mental health. And how easily our brains can fracture and break. And it doesn't take much. And sometimes those worlds are tied together. And how we tie so much of our mental health to material objects that don't matter. They can't fill your cup.
Right.
You got to fill your cup. Fight Club's got some fun stuff in it, got some great acting in it, but I could see where people could say it being overrated, especially if you're a young person and you've heard nothing but your parents or older people, oh, Fight Club's this, Fight Club's that, and then you see it and you're like, well, wait a minute, I didn't get any of that from it.
I wonder if it has something to do with, you know, gender, changes in gender, you know, roles and stuff like that.
Because
it's a late 90s film and it's of its era, you know, especially when it comes to what masculinity is and that sort of thing. So, I mean, it can be considered an important movie because of like what you were talking about, materialism and about gender roles and masculinity and toxic man and all that kind of stuff. So it can be a good teaching tool. But again, is that what people can take, you know, anything you can interpret art anyway. So, yeah.
I think certainly the 60s got this going, but I think our generation of the 90s was the first to really get into wokeism and a lot of that. And
I think that's where it would start, yeah.
We can take credit for a lot of things and certainly hold our heads up about some stuff, and then some other things we're like, oh no, we're shy. Oh my God, that did not age well. Like so it's a mixed bag, like a lot of these movies that you know, came up in the 90s.
Yeah.
Number 11, The Notebook from 2004. I found that a little interesting to see.
I wonder if that's not aged very well.
I'm curious. Yeah. I've only seen it once.
Yeah.
And I will say I really enjoyed it mm-hmm. as a foolish romantic. I thought it was one of the more beautiful romantic movies I've seen. But I have heard from a lot of people that have known the movie and read the book and everything that there is some stuff that hasn't aged the greatest.
Yeah. I'd be curious to see that.
So I could see, you know, again, very hyped movie, very talked about movie. Mm-hmm. You hadn't seen it. You're younger. You go into it.
Yeah, and a part of that, I think, is because the author of the book is not like he was at the time. He was like on top of the heap at that point. And he's kind of, you know, he's not there anymore. Yeah. He's just, I'm sure he's still working and writing.
Richard Sparks?
Nicholas Sparks. Yes. But at that point, I wonder if people even remember that. He was like huge.
Yeah, he was.
People were buying his books by the million. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So these next two I'm going to put together.
Okay.
Jaws from 1975 and Chinatown from 1974. I think, again, this has a lot to do with the way things age, but not so much in the dialogue as much as in special effects or in storytelling.
Yeah. I think more of Jaws in that sense, because I think it was, even at the time, was more overblown. I think it's not a bad movie, mm-hmm. But kind of its legacy is kind of checkered, if you ask me, because basically, and Roger Corman put it the best, I think he said, when we were doing it, it was called exploitation movies. Mm-hmm. And then here comes Jaws, and now it's a high concept thing, you know, and they keep changing, but they're all basically, it's an exploitation movie.
It is.
That's all it is, but it's got a big budget and it's got a big cast and it's got, you know, some, you know, when the shark worked, special effects that actually went through. But it's basically that, you know, if you watch the movie, you're looking at an exploitation movie from the 50s. That's basically what you're watching.
Chinatown probably hasn't aged the greatest, but still some of the better acting you will see.
Yes.
That I'll say. But I could see how just even the title Chinatown, and there's like hardly any Asians in it. Like, you know, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
There was a movie, Paul Rodriguez had a great joke. There's a movie that came out back in the day, Green Card, that starred Gerard Depardieu or whatever. And he's like, movie Green Card, not one Latino in it. Like, stuff like that. I don't know how well that ages anymore.
Yeah, right. I like it. I'm a fan, big fan of Chinatown.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the same time, yeah, I can understand that. Although, again, it's a period piece. Mm. So it ages fine because it's, you know, it's set back in the 30s anyway.
Chinatown, Jack. Nothing you can do about it. Forrest Gump at number 8.
You know, I remember seeing that in the theater
when
I was a kid.
That's funny.
And I enjoyed it. I remember having, you know, the fun silliness of meeting, you know, what is Forrest responsible for? Oh, everything, you know, that kind of thing. I realize now that has not aged well.
No.
First of all,
no.
I realize that the portrayal of some of the historical eras is kind of, it's not accurate. It's some of the groups and stuff. I just don't think they did a good job of making it accurate. And then I find out Winston Groom, the author of the novel, his was a satire.
Yes.
The book he wrote was a satire and they took it straight.
Yeah.
Robert Zemeckis and everyone who did it, they did it straight. And I still, Forrest Gump's performance is, Tom Hanks' performance is fine. You know, won an Oscar for it. Yeah, that's fine. I have no problem with that. But some of the other stuff around it, I just don't think it's aged well.
It's a shame, too, because in coming out of that movie theater, I think I've seen one of the better movies I'll ever see.
Yeah.
And some of the best acting, not just Mr. Hanks, but my main man, Gary Sinise.
Yeah.
Robin Wright. Robert Wright did an amazing job
She did an amazing part of that movie.
And it's a shame, too, because Jenny's character, you can't think of that and not think of how horribly they bumbled the HIV conversation and all of that.
Oh.
That made no sense. Even then, it didn't make a lot of sense.
That's my biggest complaint about the movie now. The way that Jenny is portrayed throughout the movie is pretty degrading.
Yeah.
To women in general, especially through that time period. So that's something you can definitely, a bone you can pick.
And it's a shame, too, because we don't have a lot of modern classics. And,
no.
And some of them are going away because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And none of this is to take away, again, from the performances of the directing or anything. It certainly is a note to Zemeckis, who is one of the better American filmmakers of all time. A horrible choice to approach the movie that way.
Yeah, I agree.
Although I'll say, I do think that there are scenes in there where it seemed like he was going for satire, but didn't land
didn't go all in.
No,
he just he pulled back. Yeah, yes. I agree.
Didn't
I agree.
Go all in. He should have gone all in. Mm-hmm. Number seven is The Shining from 1980. I think most horror movies from the 80s have not aged well for a very variety of reasons.
Right.
That one's pretty understandable.
Yeah, yeah. Again, but you can't, you have to take it into consideration because of the director.
Yeah.
Because of the performances.
Yes.
And all that stuff. You do still have to do that. I have never seen The Shining all the way through. Mm. I've seen bits and pieces. Mm. And of course, it's entered the culture now. So there's parody upon parody upon parody.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did see most of the redone one, and the less said about that is the better.
Yes.
That was awful.
Oh, dear God.
But at the same time, you're right. You know, there's probably parts of it that haven't aged very well.
I'm curious where you stand on this one. I don't think we, of all the things we've talked about, I don't think we've gotten into this.
Oh, okay.
Number six, Avatar from 2009.
Oh, boy. Again, another movie I have not seen.
Oh, okay.
I have no desire to see it.
Yeah.
I don't want to get too, you know, James Cameron-y bashing on this. We've done that before. Yeah, we don't need to keep going on that. But he's a certain kind of filmmaker. Okay. And either you are interested in what he's doing or you don't. James, famously, you've never seen Titanic.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, you're not necessarily a fan of his movies in general. Maybe, I don't know how you feel about his earlier stuff. Maybe the first Terminator movie or something like that. Yeah. That's kind of interesting. There's something there. Aliens, another good example of a decent movie that he made. But since at that point, he doesn't seem to care about like characters at all. It's just, I want to show fantastic things. Let's look at this giant ship I made and look at these blue people I made in this stunning vista, which fine, you know, that's cool. But for me, I need character, man, in my movies. It needs to be a little bit more than just look at my shiny thing here. You know,
he comes out the box so strong and so creative and so like, oh, this is good. All right. This is a filmmaker. We're going to watch the next 30, 40 years of our lives. Mm-hmm. Unlike actors, you don't know the shelf life. Directors, you can kind of think, okay, well, I'm going to get this guy for a while. Mm-hmm. And especially back in the day with Terminator, like you mentioned, Aliens and that. Groundbreaking films.
Yep.
You can also trace from Terminator 2 to right now the growth of the James Cameron ego. And how little by little, go ahead and look at all those films. Little by little, the things Seth is talking about, storytelling, character development, I don't need those. More green screen. You also see one of the worst acting directors of all time. There is not many people that will work with James Cameron after working with him once because of the torture and the things. James Cameron's the guy that'll be sitting there drinking cocoa on the set of Titanic, telling everybody else they're not cold enough. Telling Kate Winslet, I'm not seeing certain body parts that tell me you're cold. Things like that. Tell me that should be, like, how has he not been canceled? How he is still making films is mind-boggling to me. Let alone, there is plenty of evidence and plenty of proof that Avatar is something he stole. It's not even his idea. Yeah. Now, I could say you could look at the Smurfs and have stolen it from that, let alone the actual things that he has.
Yeah.
But if I'm being real and stripping all that away, I've actually watched a good portion of Avatar. It is one of three movies I've ever stopped in the middle of or in the process of and never finished.
Wow.
Even Ishtar I finished. In part because I respect the filmmakers. I put the time into it. I'm very bad at leaving things unfinished.
Yep.
And how many movies we've seen where it wasn't that great, but it really brought at the last 5 minutes was like, oh, it's one of the best
movies
I've ever seen.
Yeah.
So I watch these movies for that. Mm-hmm. If Avatar does that, that's fine. I don't need it.
You don't need it.
In part because James Cameron's ego is so big, he can't let other creatives even be creative. If you can tell, even like the props and special effects people and everything, it just, I can't think of many more overblown directors and overhyped directors, let alone the films that he makes.
Right. So I think that has a lot to do with it.
Number five, The Greatest Showman from 2017. I haven't heard a lot of hype about that one. That one kind of misses me a little.
Yeah, I guess I'm not sure. I'm really not sure. But
let's just keep moving.
Yeah, let's keep going on
at
there.
At number four, Frozen from 2013. Terry Johns just texted me, how dare they? This list is wrong. And she's yelling at them.
Well, again, this is kids' movies.
Yeah.
And it's hard not to do that, especially with how big it was. So, yeah, it's a cute movie. It's fun. It's got a And I tell you what, when I was in the theater watching it and, you know, she does her, you know, let it go thing, that was a showstopper.
Yeah.
I mean, and when I heard that the first time, I was like, whoa, that's something.
I don't think kids movies should be on this list. I really don't.
Kids. Yeah. Kids, yeah. It's
and,
be different.
And being a kid, everything's overhyped as a kid.
It's true.
Like, how excited did we get about Gum?
Yeah.
Just Gum. Just, I mean, general. Just, you know.
You can't, because you get the big movies, you can't turn around without merchandising. I mean, yes. You know, go to McDonald's, Happy Meal, whatever it is, yep. You know. Yeah.
Now, we'll as we're running out of time here, we'll get to Star Wars at number 2, Episode 6, Return of the Jedi from 1983. How dare you? How dare you? No, I love that
movie. I'm with them actually on that, because what more movie was more hyped than that at the time? Yeah. And it's not a great movie. It's a good movie, but it's not a great movie.
No, it's not.
I love it because it's Star Wars, and I wanted more Star Wars when I was a kid.
Same.
So I'm like, yeah, bring it on. But I can still see for the other side where it's like, yeah, it's kind of disappointing.
You got Ewoks, you got Dark Luke, you got Han frozen, you got so many cool things about that movie.
Yep.
And I go back and watch it, and I'm like, oh. Oh, it doesn't. Now, Empire seems to hold up for me.
That one does.
I don't know why. But
no, I agree with you.
I think by the time Return of the Jedi comes around, whether we want to admit it or whether we wanted it or not, they needed to take a break. Because even by that point, it's kind of like, well, wait a minute, what are we doing here? Like, it just looked like, we can make a cool toy out of these Ewoks. Let's put them in there.
Yeah.
It felt a little
like
that.
It seems a lot like that.
It got away from slowly more and more away from the original story.
Do you have an idea how much they make on toys for movies? Yeah, I mean, come on.
It's hard to blame them.
I know, and it really is.
And number one on the list, Avengers Infinity War.
Ooh.
So for those that don't know, that's right before Endgame.
Yep.
That's like, the
kind
one,
of a two-parter, yeah.
Yeah, that ends with everybody, you know, being in the ether and all that.
That right.
I don't know what part of that is overhyped, but I get it as long as they're not saying Endgame was overhyped, because that one, I think that might have been underplayed with how much of the...
Shocking as it was. And I think maybe you touched on something right there, because Infinity War was hyped. But they didn't really need to do that with Endgame. They'd already done all the hype, and they knew everyone was going to go see that movie. They knew people were like, we got to see what happens, you know, that kind of thing. So I get it where maybe it was a little bit. I think everyone was, I wasn't, but I think so many people were shocked by the ending of Infinity War that maybe that had some played into it as well. But yeah.
It's one of the greatest cliffhangers of a movie you'll ever see, especially because... Like, even a logical person that doesn't know the comics and everything. Well, they just brought Black Panther. They just created Black Panther.
Panther, yeah.
It's the biggest, at the time, it's the biggest movie in the world. They're not going to kill off that character. You know that logically, but you leave that movie like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen with Chadwick's character? What's going on with Black Panther and all that? And that, I think, left a bad taste in people's mouths for that 6-7 months until Endgame came out. And Endgame was such a bring it home, like you're just, you know, so happy kind of ending movie and everything that I think that Infinity War just has a bad taste in people's mouths. It's a little like you want to get to the healing part. Mm-hmm. You don't want to go through the steps of physical therapy.
Because it's not a complete story.
Right.
It's a complete movie, but it's not a complete story because we don't learn that till Endgame. So
that's a big part of this.
So that makes sense. That does really make sense. So
interesting list. Again, you can find the complete list at screenrant.com.
Yes. Wow. Well, we killed that hour, huh?
Yeah, that was fun.
We haven't done this in a while, but stay tuned, everyone. We're going to have more guests coming on very soon.
Oh, yeah.
So we want to talk to everyone out there. If you have suggestions or if you are an artist, let us know.
Yes.
And we will get in touch with you and see if we can work something out. Thanks again for listening to Director's Cut, everyone. Have a great week.
I'm John O'Hurley, and I support Paralyzed Veterans of America because our heroes have sacrificed so much for our independence.
I had just come home. I had noticed my legs were swollen. Next thing I know, it was 3 weeks later. I was paralyzed. PVA has brought me back to life.
While parachuting with my platoon, my parachute didn't open. It left me paralyzed. I just don't think my family would be as happy as they are without the support that I received from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
For more than 75 years, Paralyzed Veterans of America has kept a promise to never leave a fallen hero behind. That's why Paralyzed Veterans of America is providing specialized medical care, life-changing treatments, benefits our heroes earned, the jobs they want, and the accessible vehicles and homes they need. Our paralyzed veterans have helped us live the lives we enjoy today. It's our turn to give them the best lives possible. To learn more, go to pva.org today.
Some people won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, could potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripescast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
Smiles are powerful. They spread joy, laughter, and hope. But not everyone gets a fair chance at a smile. Every 3 minutes, a baby is born with a cleft, making it difficult to talk, hear, eat, and even breathe. In America, most children with clefts receive immediate care, but others around the world may never have access to the surgery they need to thrive.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248 DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.